So welcome back. Well, you know, we've been talking about building a deeper believing in ourselves, looking at any of the Harrys that we may be carrying. You've taken a Harry in your life, you put him down, or at least stopped dragging him quite so far. And that's a major accomplishment, by the way. It takes far more effort and determination to let something go than it actually does to pick it up. And you've done that, and you're working on that. And these old self-defeating titles, you've taken a look at them, descriptions of yourself that are no longer valid. You've replaced them with something more powerful. So once you may have seen yourself as the victim of circumstance, today you see yourself as the architect of your own life. You're building a dream, not a whim or a passing fancy, but a dream that requires your passion, your persistence, your belief in yourself, that you're really worthy of having this dream come true. So in setting down Harry, you tell yourself, this doesn't belong to me anymore. It's no longer useful for me. It's an idea from my past, and it's time for me to set it down. I've made a decision to use my God-given creative capacity to let go. I may have to set it down a few times when I remind myself, but I make a decision right here and right now to set down the stuff that is not useful, that might be holding me back. And I decide in this moment to set down any preconceived ideas that I have about my own worthiness that can keep me from experiencing what I yearn for deep in my soul. So you've tested your dream and you know it's a good dream. You must now do the work, and that's what this part is for, is helping you discover how you can release identity issues that are incoherent with the dream you want and lay claim to a sense of deserving. You are deserving because of your divine birthright. But there's a difference between being deserving and feeling deserving. So this lesson is about learning how to amplify your sense of feeling deserving, because that amplifies and opens you up to the magnetic field that invokes the law of attraction to circumstances, situations, support, surprise support, people, all kinds of things that come in by your sense of deserving to help you attract what is required to bring forth your dream. There's a Hindu story about a wish-fulfilling tree. There was a man who roamed the world. In the course of his wandering, he came to a forest, and he sat to rest under the tree. A gentle breeze was blowing. As he looked around, the man thought, "If I had a companion, I would be completely happy." Now, it just so happened that this particular tree was a wish-fulfilling tree. A wish-fulfilling tree is divine, and if a person sits beneath it, his every wish is instantly granted. So at that very moment, a beautiful woman appears. And the man is enraptured. She joined him under the tree, and he thought, "Oh, thank you for fulfilling my wish. This is perfect." And then he thought, "What a pity the two of us have to sit under a tree exposed to the elements. It would be much better if we had a house with a few bedrooms and a dining room equipped with all the amenities. Then I would lack nothing." And immediately the house he wished for appeared. Delighted, he went into the house with his sweetheart, sat down, had a loving chat with her, and then he said, "What's the point of living like paupers in this house? I'd like to live like a lord, if only we had a butler and a couple of servants." And in the twinkling of an eye, a butler and two servants appeared. The man called the servants and said, "Prepare for us two delectable dishes." And before long, the butler brought two trays of gourmet food. The man tasted the food. Oh, it was delicious. And then the man began to wonder, "So what's going on? I wished for a wife and she arrived. I wished for a house and got a beautiful house. I wished for a butler and two servants and they appeared. Then I wished for delectable dishes and they too materialized. What's going on here? No way can this be happening to me. No way. I mean, I'm just a wanderer. Now I've sat under a tree and look at all this. There's something wrong here. Yeah, this can't be real. I can't have this." And no sooner did the thought cross his mind, poof, it all disappeared. So the truth is, in essence, we're all sitting under a wish-fulfilling tree. The energy that we send forth as a co-creator with life has a magnetic pull to it. So we're all sending out energy all the time that is in harmony with the major images we're holding. So if we're sending out energy that says, "I deserve the dreams that are in my heart, not because of anything I've done, but because of who I am," then you're able to receive your dreams to a much higher magnitude. You're able to even see opportunities that are there that most people can't see. You can't be any more deserving than you are, no matter who you are listening to this. You didn't create yourself. You're part of life expressing itself. That makes the very DNA, the very concept of you, in the mind of the infinite. You are worthy of all good that is possible. But that doesn't make you feel deserving. So authentically, by your essence, you are, but it doesn't make you feel deserving. So this lesson is about helping each one of us step into a higher realization and sense of feeling about the deserving that is in us to create and co-create the good things that are in our minds and hearts. You can't be any more deserving, but it's how you feel about yourself that creates the magnetic field. We create our own worlds of experience out of thought and imagination. When we discard our gifts, thinking, you know, so what's the catch? How come good stuff is happening to me? There's no way all those good things can be happening to me. We do that when we're ungrateful. So the man was sitting here just like you and me, and we may attract into our experience a relationship, but before very long, if we don't believe we're deserving of it, we will create circumstances, thoughts, and beliefs that will push that relationship away because we're thinking, I don't deserve this. We're not in a state of gratitude. Gratitude is the feeling tone that is harmonious with abundance, the experience of abundance. Gratitude is the feeling tone that is harmonious with the experience of abundance. A lack of deserving, a sense of self-loathing or self-criticism is a feeling tone that is in harmony with a sense of lack, and it can show up in abundant different ways. But anytime there is constriction in the feeling tone, you will have constriction in the experience in your life. And when there is expansion in the feeling tone, gratitude, appreciation, we even think of the word appreciate with money. That means it's expanding. So the feeling tone we hold is a magnetic field. So you might land a great job that's exactly what you're wishing for, dreaming for. You have a dream for this great job. But if you don't feel deserving, you'll create in your mind all kinds of thoughts that will create a magnetic field that'll be a sense of lack, I'm not good enough, oh my God, they're going to find out, I don't know what I really need to know. And little by little, we sabotage the opportunity that has come to us or what others will believe in us or about us. We sabotage projects we're on. We create exactly what it is that we believe deep down we really deserve. There's a friend of mine, a woman I knew, who had this dream for a relationship. So she was dreaming the relationship, and finally this really wonderful guy came into her life. And she was so happy at first, you know, that she'd finally attracted what she really wanted. But it wasn't long, really not long at all, before she started saying, you know, he's just a little flabby around the middle. If he just would work out a little bit more. And then it was, I just wish he wouldn't complain so much. And she was the one who was complaining about him complaining. But nonetheless, it wasn't very long until the whole energy of that relationship had shifted and he left. And the very dream she desired came to her but went away. When you get down to what she believed in herself, it was, see, here's proof. Every single relationship I have only lasts a short time. And she created an experience that absolutely validated her believing of, I don't deserve it. She didn't appreciate the relationship, just like herself. She criticized it. Another woman I know who had an experience of wanting to heal from her past. She'd had a relationship with her mother that was very, very difficult. And we're describing in these lessons experiences where circumstances have happened that we carry forth into our future. And they sabotage and thwart the very things that we want. So as we come to understand this, you are going to have the ability to easily discard things, easily make a shift in frequency, as easy as if you're holding a remote control and you don't want to watch CNN anymore because you want to have a different story. You're no longer interested in the drama that's going on in the world. You're going to turn on the Nature Channel, or you're going to turn on something else that is way more interesting to you. And as easily as you shift the vibration that changes the channel and the picture, you're going to be able to do it with your own mind. So this friend I had, you know, she'd had this awful relationship with her mother. Linda was the oldest of five kids. Her mother, she didn't know this, she was a kid, but her mother was mentally ill. Linda had been the one who was in charge of protecting the other kids. Her mother would just burst out in a violent rage. One day, Linda's 13 years old. I mean, she's still a kid. and she found her mother with scissors pointing at the neck of her 5-year-old brother. So, and this 13-year-old was the one who had to pull her mother off her brother. So Linda had to move into this kind of responsible position. The mother got treatment. She, over time, was stabilized enough to live at home again. But the mother's life was always mitigated by her illness and the medication that she had to take to help with that. And the truth was, it didn't matter what Linda did, her mother criticized it. It didn't matter what she did, it wasn't good enough. It didn't matter what she did, her mother never appreciated it. So as a young woman and into adulthood, Linda moved into this, you know, growing tremendous resentment about her mother. And it affected everything in Linda's life. She wanted to be more deserving. She wanted to build the dreams in her life. She wanted to do things, but this mother, this energy she had about her mother. And so as we got to know each other, she began to say, you know, I want to change this. And that was really part of the learning, is to recognize she couldn't change her mother, but she could change her inner relationship with her mother. And that's true for every one of us. You can't change what's happened in your life. You can't go back and change the circumstances, but you absolutely can change your relationship to those circumstances and what they mean to you and your perception of them. So this leads us now into the second practice that absolutely opens the door for us in terms of moving into a deeper state of deserving. While we're practicing no to dragging Harry, we can say yes to a practice of living in and from gratitude. Being grateful is not about good manners, remembering to say please and thank you. It's an active, powerful, spiritual practice. It's not a practice of saying I'm grateful for. It's a practice of saying I'm grateful in. And what's the difference? Many of us, you know, can feel grateful easily enough in good times, and it's important. But feeling grateful because something is wonderful and happening in a way that we really wanted it to happen, that isn't really evolutionary. It's a response, and it's a healthy response, but it's not evolutionary and transcendent to you discovering a deeper sense of deserving, which puts you in a higher amplified magnitude, invoking the law of attraction to the very things that are the images in your mind. To be grateful no matter what has happened, to be grateful in challenging times, it shifts our perspective so that we can see things differently and we actually experience things differently. Linda had come to a place where she realized that she did not want to feel resentment for the woman who gave her life. She didn't want to feel that. So one time she had sent her mother a gift. It was a book. Her mother wrote her back and said, "How dare you send me that book?" And that was the kind of relationship she had with her mother. It was just like no matter what she did, it wasn't okay. So Linda wanted to shift that energy. Now the power of this story is that we can shift our inner experience. We can shift our energy regardless of the circumstances in our lives. Linda's mother was not going to change. Linda's mother was going to continue to attack and criticize Linda. Linda's mother was going to continue to be mentally ill. And Linda said, "But I want to change my experience." And she didn't want to abandon her mother. Her mother needed help. So she began to look at the spiritual practice of gratitude, and gratitude not for the life she had with her mother, but gratitude in the life she had with her mother. And you can think of Apostle Paul, who in the New Testament, he was in a dank, dark prison, having been beaten, scourged, tortured, for teaching Christianity, and he wrote this wonderful passage. Now, the Roman prisons were very different in terms of the images of what we think of as prison today. They were disease-infested. I mean, these were horrible, horrible places. And so here he is, and from this place, he is authoring one of his letters, and this is what he says. "I have learned this one thing, that in whatever circumstance I find myself, therein to be grateful." He didn't say therefore to be grateful, not to be grateful for the circumstance. You're not going to be grateful for that circumstance. Linda's not ever going to be grateful that her mother is mentally ill or grateful for being in prison. But in the circumstance, there is a liberating gratitude that you're in life, that there's you're breathing, that you have opportunities to shape your perception about what it's going to mean for you. Viktor Frankl, who's the founder of a psychology called logotherapy, in the beginning is the word, the idea that we shape our experience based on the ideas we hold about that experience. He wrote about being in a prison camp in Nazi Germany when all his loved ones had been murdered. And he had hidden the manuscript that he, as a physician, he'd been working on this manuscript, and the tribunal found him, and they pulled him, and the guards found the manuscript. And he wrote about hiding his manuscript, and the guards found the manuscript, and they took him in front of the tribunal. They stripped him naked. Now, everybody he'd loved had by now murdered. Now they were burning in front of him the one copy of his manuscript. And one of the guards happens to notice that he still has on a very thin gold wedding band. And they demand the gold wedding band. It was the very last vestige of any connection to the life he had known. And he said that when he reached and went to pull off that wedding band, something happened inside of him. And he said he touched a place inside himself that he would call the last and authentic freedom for every individual. And that was the freedom to decide how he would respond. The last authentic freedom. And that's the freedom every one of us has, if we exercise it, to choose how we will respond, to choose. And Frankl said he exercised that for the first time consciously, where instead of just getting so angry or upset or hurt that they were demanding this last vestige from him, something rose up inside of him, and he said to himself, "No matter what you do to me, you cannot make me live in hatred. I refuse to live in hatred." And that began not only a moment of authentic inner freedom for him, but also established him on a path that would touch literally thousands and thousands of people's lives later on as he was released from the prison and would begin his work in the world. Now, in a minor way, each one of us could have that same kind of liberation that will transform our whole lives as well. So Linda, in telling the story that in the practice of gratitude, she decided she was going to be grateful even when her mother was critical. Not an easy task. She was going to be grateful no matter what her mother did, that her mother could not control Linda's state of inner gratitude. Now that was a practice because it was easier to feel resentful than it was to feel grateful. So she told me that one day she went in to have lunch with her mother. She drove across town. Again, she took food, knowing that when she offered her mother the food, the mother was going to find something wrong with it. Her mother was going to question whether or not it was even safe to eat, find something mean to say about it. So she knew that, and always before, she'd let herself feel hurt again by that behavior, that activity. But this time she decided to use this as an exercise to amplify her ability to keep her own inner state, to practice gratitude no matter what was happening. So she sat down and they went through the whole routine about the food. The mother said, "I'm not eating that." The mother went to the refrigerator and pulled out a piece of cheese and a piece of bread and sat down across from Linda with the lunch spread that she had brought. And the mother began to eat, telling her stories and complaining. And Linda said she sat there. And then all of a sudden she said, "It was like I got lifted up." And Linda wrote a poem about what she experienced, and she wrote, "For a moment, the scene in front of me went mute. I watched my mother chew her food, her cheeks a bit bulged, mouth opening, closing, opening, closing. I saw my mother's lips move, but I could no longer hear it. It was as if I had left my body and became a witness who saw a frightened elderly woman who knew only how to ask for love through criticism, who knew only how to ask for love through complaining, who knew only how to ask for love through illness, a woman who had never found her voice, had never experienced her personal power, had never learned the true language of love, a woman who would never understand that she was one of my greatest teachers. And the only thing I truly saw at that moment was my mother's purity and innocence. And I felt a wind blow through me, and on its breath, it carried away all the years of resentment, all the unfulfilled expectations. And I knew then what an honor it was to take care of her, to be there for her in whatever capacity she would allow me to be." And Linda would say that through the next few years, as she nursed her mother and through the mother's dying experience, she never again retracted to that old perspective of, "Look what my mother's doing to me again." She moved into a recognition of herself as a co-creator, just as Viktor Frankl, that she could choose how she was going to respond. And through gratitude, she built within herself a sense of deserving to have not only a relationship with her mother, but a relationship with life, that she really could and did deserve everything that was harmonious with the state that gratitude brings. So the gratitude did not change Linda's mother, not once and not at all. but it did change Linda. And there's no thing in this world that's greater than the power of the life that's at work in you. There's no circumstance greater than that power. You and I have to access that power, though. And we can't access something we don't believe in. So building a larger believing of our own deserving is paramount to making dreams come true. We want to build a dream that's durable, that doesn't just dissolve the moment something comes along that's unlike what we want, that doesn't crumble under our own sabotaging because we don't believe we deserve it. By letting go of what is dead weight, and in the practice of gratitude, that gratitude absolutely shifts our awareness so that we begin to see things differently, feel things differently, experience things differently. This is a very, very powerful spiritual practice. You know, the universe grants us what it is that we will receive in proportion to our own willingness to receive it. If I go to the ocean of life and dip in with a teaspoon, the ocean says, okay, here, take your full teaspoon. That's great. You came with a teaspoon, have your teaspoon. If I go with a bucket, the ocean says, oh, you want a bucket? Great, take a bucket. The ocean has no mind to withhold its bucket of good from me. I can go with a teaspoon, I can go with a bucket, or if I want, I can wade into that water and float in it and find that the ocean absolutely delights to support me, absolutely delights to give its whole self to me. I can ride on its power as I allow myself to be lifted by it. So how are we going to that ocean of life ourselves? Do we feel we only deserve a teaspoonful or a bucketful? Are we at the stage where we're willing to say, okay, I'm choosing to deserve my dream. I'm ready to deserve my dream. There's a woman I know who is a motivational speaker and author and works in large corporations. Christine said that what was happening for her, that even though she was able to speak well and had sold many, many thousands of books and was a well-respected speaker and trainer in corporations, deep down she didn't really believe that she deserved a good relationship. She had not been able to master that part of her life. And she found herself critical. She was critical of herself, and basically she was critical of everybody else, particularly if they started to get close to her. She would find something wrong with everyone, so she rejected all of these men before they had a chance to reject her. She said that there was a man with whom she did some business and thought of him primarily as a business acquaintance. Specifically, she thought of him as a business acquaintance with a huge nose. Every time she would see him, she would think, God, that guy should have nose surgery and get something done about that. That's just a huge nose. But as their work happened to kind of keep them together, they would have business meetings about this and that, and every time she would see his nose, inwardly she would criticize that bulbous proboscis, as she called it. So she got to know him better and better, and there were some really wonderful traits in him, and she began to think, you know, I have never had a positive, long-lasting relationship in my life. I get them started, and then I always find something wrong with people, and I think the problem really may lie with me. So one day, while sitting across from this business acquaintance, she said, all of a sudden it hit me. In fact, it's as plain as the nose on his face. I'm the one who's always criticizing. So she told herself, okay, well, I just got to practice not being critical. I'm going to set down that Harry. I'm going to practice being grateful for the people in my life. Now, it's not an easy practice because you're repatterning a way of being. It was a diligent practice. But once she made the decision, that didn't get rid of the Harry of the history in her practice of moving into criticism. She did catch herself, and she caught herself again and again, and she would catch herself moving into criticism and consciously choose to move back into gratitude, then catch herself finding something wrong, and then consciously choose to move back to gratitude. So she thought, okay, what is it about this guy that I could appreciate? Well, I appreciate that he's been very supportive with some of my business ideas. I appreciate that he's got a good sense of humor. I appreciate that he cares about the environment. I appreciate that he's very kind. And she thought, I'm going to keep thinking about those things. I'm going to keep thinking about the fact that he's supportive, that he's kind, that he cares about the environment, that he's good to people. I'm just going to keep thinking those thoughts. And back to the Apostle Paul, of course, when he said, I've learned in whatever condition I am in, therein to be grateful. We find him then also saying, so whatsoever things are good or true or lovely or of good report, think on these things. And so while Christine may not have known that scripture or ever read what the Apostle Paul wrote 2,000 years ago, nevertheless, here was a practice that she was unleashing in her life. So she chose to think about what she could appreciate. And she said that over time, as their acquaintance grew, they became friends. And she said that one day they met for coffee, and as they were sitting, all of a sudden, just like that, it was like this huge feeling came over her, and she looked at him and she said, "John, you have the most wonderful nose. You have the best nose I've ever seen. It's strong, it's powerful, it's present." And he looked at her and he says, "You want to go out on a date?" And they became better and better friends. They developed a relationship. Eventually, those two were married. And when she told me the story, she said, "And our children have the very best noses." You know, it was a long-time marriage. It was very happy. And where was the shift? You know, you can't be any more deserving. Neither can I. I can't be any more deserving. We're children of this infinite presence called life. We're children of the divine. We can't be more deserving, but we sure can feel more deserving. And it's in our feeling nature where the magnetic field is built. So a number of years ago, I had an experience that helped me increase my sense of deserving. I have many wonderful friends in my life, and one of my friends, who's the author of a book called Seat of the Soul, Gary Zukav, had invited me to come to Mount Shasta and hike Mount Shasta with him. And we've been friends for many years and supported each other and done some visioning and dreaming together. And so in that summer, we decided we'd spend some time climbing the mountain and visioning and dreaming together. We stopped for lunch at a place called Alpine Lake. And as we were sitting there, Gary said, "Oh, guess who called me last week?" And I said, "Who?" And he said, "Kenny Loggins." Now, I've been a Kenny Loggins fan for a long time. In fact, I had so fallen in love with his CD, Leap of Faith, that had just been published about that time. And I'd gone to see a concert of his many, many years ago and just thought his music was terrific. And so when Gary says that Kenny Loggins called him, I said, "Kenny Loggins called you? Oh, my gosh." And he said, "Yeah, he read my book. He loves my book. He's going to come up next week and hang out a couple of days." And I said, "Oh, my gosh, Gary, if you and Kenny Loggins ever wanted to do an event, I would sponsor an event in Portland and create this big venue for you." And Gary goes, "Whoa, wait a minute. You know, I don't even know the guy yet." And I said, "Well, just keep a corner of your mind open to the possibility." And I've learned to do that over the years, that when at first blush something seems impossible or you can't figure it out, you just say, "I'm going to keep a corner of my mind open to the possibility." And you can encourage others to do that as well. So I said, "Gary, well, just keep a corner of your mind open to the possibility." He goes, "Well, you know." So after I left that meeting with Gary and I'm driving home, I started thinking, "Oh, Mary, you know, you're like inviting Kenny Loggins to do something. You know, he doesn't know you. You don't know him. You're doing huge venues, not 2,000 or 3,000 people, which is something you do." And I started to notice my train of thinking moving to, "You don't deserve this," in some version of that. And I had to catch myself. And I say, "Wait a minute. You know, they don't have to say yes." I checked it real quick with the dream test. Is it something I'd love to do? You know, is it aligned with my values? Would it cause me to grow? Do I need help from a higher power? Is there some good in this for others? And this idea passed that test. Now, this wasn't the huge life-altering dream, but it was something that ignited me. It was something that sounded fun to me. It was something I'd like to get to know Kenny Loggins. So it was just passive in a sense that I thought the idea, but then as I began to walk away from the meeting with Gary and drive home, I noticed this feeling of undeserving. This was outside my frying pan. It was outside my comfort zone. But it did pass the test, so I just sent it back to the infinite mind, the subconscious mind, and I said, "This is something I'd love to have happen." And then I went about my business. Well, a few months later, I got a phone call from Gary, and he said, "Guess what? Kenny and I have become friends, and I ran your idea by him, and he'd love to do an event with me, and if you still want to sponsor an event, let's create that." So we set a date a few months from then. We got the venue. We sold out. And then a week before the event was starting, Kenny called me himself and said, "You know, I'm coming into town. I'm going to be there a day early. You guys want to get together for dinner?" So here Kenny Loggins, his wife, Gary, and his wife come to my house. We have dinner together. At the end of the dinner, Kenny says, "Guess what? I've got my guitar in the car. How about if I go get it and we do some music?" He brings his guitar into my living room, sits down, and the first song he played was the very favorite song I have in my heart of all the music he does. And I'm sitting there realizing, oh my gosh, This was an idea, a dream, and I just surrendered it to the pattern of possibility, and I had to do the work where I would allow myself to feel that I could deserve to have Kenny Loggins do an event in Portland. Not only did I get that, he comes to home and plays a private concert in my living room. Now, you know, that may not seem like a big deal on some frames, but for me in that moment, it was very transformative. And it showed me the inner pattern we hold absolutely has to be coherent with the outer experience we're having. So I share this story with you not because it was like this huge life-transforming dream, but it was something that mattered to me in the moment. And you will find and practice the steps of dream building yourself that this is not like a one-shot deal. You're going to build one dream. But believing in yourself and in your deserving helps you to make dream building a way of life. Being grateful is a spiritual practice that doesn't have to wait for good news. It becomes integrated into your daily routine as much as a morning coffee or tea or workout at your health club. So that's what you do with the dream you're working on right now. You stop and say, you know what, in the realm of possibilities, this is a real possibility. And underneath that, if anybody deserves it, anybody in life, I'm part of that life, I deserve it. Why? Not because of what I've done, but because of who I am. And I'm grateful to be who I am. You can't be any more deserving, but you can feel more deserving. And in that feeling state, you become a magnet to that good. Who we come from, our sense of deserving, makes us deserving of every good dream. Thank you.